Welcome to Blondie and the Brit, Writing, Publishing, and Beyond. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com. Welcome to Blondie and the Brit podcast. I am Blondie, KJ Waters.
And I'm Suzanne Cowman, I'm the Brit.
And together we're Blondie and the Brit.
Yay!
Woohoo! I am the author of Stealing Time.
And I'm the author of The Rejected Writers Book Club.
This episode is brought to you by Susan Spann, the author of The Ninja's Daughter, a mystery novel set in 16th century Japan. When an actor's daughter is murdered on the banks of Kyoto's Kamo River, Master Ninja Hiro Hattori and Portuguese Jesuit Father Mateo are the victim's only hope for justice. Kirkus calls The Ninja's Daughter a nicely balanced combination of mystery, political machinations, and Japanese customs, and the New York Times bestselling author Lisa Brackman called it a compelling mystery powered by political intrigue and cultural conflicts. Available in paperback and ebook on Amazon, wherever books are sold.
Welcome to Blondie and the Brit, and this week we have something completely different for you, and we're so excited to bring you a special an Audience Choice Award show where we're choosing some of the incredible parts of the interviews that we've been staging over the last year.
Yeah, this year has been so exciting. We did one show every week. It's been an amazing year. Some of the people that we've met, I'm just still blown away by the connections that we've made, Suzanne.
Yeah, me too. And when we started this, we didn't realize the wealth of information that we were going to learn and the connections we were going to make. I mean, we set out with this goal to just bring a podcast and try and sample, you know, some of the questions we'd heard indie book authors talking about and published authors talking about. We wanted to try and tackle some of those, you know, social media problems or writing problems. And we've just been given so many nuggets of incredible information through the year that we wanted to honor that, right? So, KJ?
Yeah. And honor the authors. I mean, thank them for spending the time with us. And then, you know, a lot of them have really helped us market the podcast and help share their great information. So it's been a thrill. It's been so exciting. And Suzanne and I were talking this summer, and we really wanted to do something just to kind of thank them. And we just thought we'd do something like this. So we came up with the idea to break it up into categories. We wanted to have clips from each author and have them, you know, kind of showcase what we thought was one of the best things about their podcast, and then let our listeners vote on it. So that's what this is all about.
Just listening to this, you're going to get what we feel is the best of the last year. And KJ and I have literally listened to all the interviews all over again so that we could pick out just the great parts of those interviews. And so what we're going to be doing for you now is playing what we feel are the best of the year in a particular subject. If you are interested in voting, you could go to KJ's blog, which is KJ.
KJ Waters, author. blogspot.com. And all the voting's over there. Each week, and starting a couple weeks ago, each week of this month, we have had a new category. The first week was best social media tips. And then last week, we had two categories. And then we have two again this week. So it's really fun. It takes just a couple minutes. Each clip is only about a minute long. And then you just vote for the one that you think is the best.
So what we're going to do, just to give you a little refresher, and also just we're going to share those, each of these categories, with you now on this podcast so you can hear some of the great information that we've collected. So starting with the first category, KJ, which is...
Yes, the first category was the best social media tips. That's what we're going to play for you right now, just a little bit from each one of those amazing authors. And we have some powerhouses here. We have Rachel Thompson, also known as Rachel in the OC. She is the founder of Monday Blogs. Hashtag. We have Joey Pinkney, who is an expert on social media marketing and has his own tweet service. Claude Bouchard, who is one of the very first number one people on Twitter, has a huge following, 500,000 people. Lawrence O'Brien, who runs Books Go Social, is another tweeting and author service. He does a ton of different things for authors, and he tells us some really important information. And then we have Nicole Persson, who kind of breaks down what SEO means. It's very confusing for a lot of us authors, so she gives us a really good tip on that. So you are the inventor of the Monday blog hashtag. You want to just tell people what that is?
Hashtags are wonderful. And if you click on a hashtag, it creates a hyperlink and it goes into search. And so what I decided was, here's an excellent way for authors, bloggers, writers, readers, everybody to connect in a way That's twofold. One is for writers and bloggers to share our blog posts on a specific day on Monday, and it's specific to blogging, Monday blogs, right? And it would do two things. It would increase traffic to our blog posts, which brings traffic to our websites, which helps our SEO, search engine optimization, and therefore helps our Google ranking. And then secondly, it increases our connection and our followings on Twitter. So if you go to my website, badredheadmedia.com, I created a post that said, here's what Monday Blogs is and here's why you should be participating. But that wasn't enough either. So I created the handle, which is the @ Monday Blogs, and that's the Twitter account. And so I retweet people all day. So I start a volunteer, and we start retweeting on Sunday night for Monday Blogs. The only rules really are no book promotion, because this is about bringing traffic to your site and sharing your blog posts.
Right.
So it's been going on now 3.5 years. At this point, about 8,000 to 10,000 people participate every week.
How many retweets in a day on that hashtag?
Oh, my gosh. 15,000, 20,000, 30,000. We can only retweet from the Monday Blogs account up to 1,000 an hour, because that's a Twitter limit.
Up to 1,000 an hour. So you're doing just clicking your finger 1,000 times?
Yeah, that's why I had to get somebody to help.
Out.
Oh,
woman,
and then they cut us off.
If you're not using that hashtag, you're really missing out on a great opportunity to promote your brand.
If you don't really understand hashtags, it really is a way to get your word out to a whole bunch of people that aren't even your followers. People search for those hashtags and they read what's on them. It's like a little search engine of its own. And what I loved about hers is she actually physically sits and does that for the community, her and her assistant all day pressing send, send, send to be able to send those Monday blogs out. And I just admire that in her. I think that's a really wonderful service she's doing for the community.
She gives so much back. But anyway, and then there's Joey. He, first of all, I love his voice and his
little quirky. He's got the best voice.
He does quirky sense of humor, but he does a lot of the Twitter graphics, and the man has, he knows what he's doing. I used him for my tweet package I had when I was promoting my short story that went out. And I mean, the amazing engagement, and I don't know, I think he really knows what he's doing. He did a great job putting a few things together for me, which I saved, and I have to say I'm going to be using. But
yeah.
To be careful to not put things on your social media. If you're trying to present yourself as an author, you probably don't want pictures of the 17 cats that are in your house. And not to down people that have pets, not at all, because I love pets. But when I'm looking at, you know, as a reader, when I'm looking at author's profile, sometimes you do want like personal stuff on there, but other times you want stuff to kind of coincide with what you're doing as a writer.
Right.
You know, sometimes your personal life kind of becomes distracting, you know, and if that's the case, and you know, stay away from that. But then some of the mechanics of actually maximizing the small space that you have with Twitter in terms of like links, hashtags, you know, proper use of hashtags, your bio, I think they've recently made it maybe about a year or two ago, they made it so it's 160 characters, but taking the time to actually use the link to actually go directly to the sales page. And I'll talk about why it's important to find that short link and use that as opposed to, you know, just linking to a website that pretty much has everything from ebooks to dental floss, where it's easy for a person to get lost as opposed to finding your book on Amazon.
And then with Claude, the basics, just go back to how do you grow your Twitter following. I mean, I think he gives us some really important information. I run an author group for local authors, and that's their big thing. I don't understand Twitter. How do you get people to follow you back? And so Claude's information is extremely important for anyone that's trying to sell a book, because as Suzanne and I have both talked about a lot, Twitter is the biggest way that's free to sell your book. Twitter god status. Tell us how you did that.
There again, Twitter I was completely unfamiliar with as well when I first published the books in the early to mid 2009. Came to learn of Twitter, and my intention was get the word out there. I wasn't looking at spending huge sums of cash for advertising. I just started following people. and I follow people, and then after a couple of days, people that I haven't followed back, I unfollow them and then follow more, and that's how it started. I've had people asking me over time, like, how'd you do it? How'd you do it? Growing my Twitter following. And for the longest time, I had people convinced it was giving away chocolate chip cookies. And then I was found out that, no, that wasn't really the case because everybody was claiming their cookies. But I wrote a blog in March 2012 that's still on the website explaining how I reached 250,000 followers and explaining the tools that I used at the time. And since then, my following has grown to, I'm up to 560,000 followers or something. Wow. I no longer follow people. I follow people back. What I was doing, what I did initially years ago, I started on Twitter in August 2009. As I mentioned, I follow people, they follow back. Those who didn't, I dropped follow more over and over. Since over the last 2 years, I've just stopped following people. I just follow people back. And I'm going up about, 30,000 followers a year.
Wow, that's amazing.
And Lawrence, what a dear, dear man. He was just a delight to interview. And it was hard to choose from his interview because he had so much great information. I felt like I was sat in Ireland next to a fireside with him. Did you, KJ?
Yes.
Listening to his wisdom,
Well, in his wisdom, and he's just so, like, effervescent, and he's just got such a heart for authors. We really identify with him.
And I just thought his tip about the websites was really revolutionary to me. As silly as it sounds, it made so much sense to bring your audience in that way, the tip that he gives on the podcast. I think it's great.
Now, how to do a blog, how to get it right. And we have this idea about extending your book onto your blog. So how do we as writers take advantage of the internet? Now, I have this theory that we can extend our books. Say I'm writing that romantic novel about the woman escaping on the ship to the Caribbean. I could put a map on my blog site. I could put an old map showing the pirate places in the Caribbean and their journeys. And I could put pictures. Maybe you went on a research trip to the Caribbean, which would be nice. I could show pictures of the cove they ended up in. So we've got pictures and maps and descriptions. So there's an extension to the book in your website. So the nice thing about that for me is that if you promote that blog with all these pictures of the Caribbean and about pirates and your research and a bibliography, it's going to attract people who are interested in pirates and the Caribbean and everything. And then you've got a link at the bottom of each blog post, which goes, if you like pirates of the Caribbean, go to my Amazon page and where are my books about this?
Yeah, and lastly, Nicole, she was, what a great, wonderful young lady, so motivated, so such a together person. She has a real easy way of describing things. And as you say, SEO is one of those things that people don't really understand.
Yep, it's true. And I mean, with Nicole's, even me, I've been in the social media world for 4 years now. It was like, oh, okay, that's so much more.
That makes sense.
Basic. You hear about it all the time and just kind of like this stressful moment, you're SEO. And I'm like, little twitch. But just to put it in such simple terms, she's a millennial, so she understands this stuff really well.
Yeah, she does. Yeah. It's great.
Search engine optimization is making sure that you are showing up really well when somebody Googles you or looks you up online in some other way. So when someone types in Nicole J. Persan on Google, I want to be the first one who shows up. I want my website to show up. I want my Amazon author profile to show up. I want my social media to show up, so on and so forth, so that it's really easy for people to find me online. So search engine optimization, kind of when you get into manipulating it, it sounds more complicated than it is. There are certain things that you can do on your website to improve it, such as manipulating the metadata, which is like the descriptions of your different pages and that kind of thing.
Right.
And then owning many online, if you can imagine my air quotes, properties. So that includes social media and that kind of thing. So the more places I am online, the better I'll show up on Google, because Google says, like, oh, they must be looking for this person because this person is everywhere on the internet. Time, what I do online is try to reach out to people who might like the content of my books. So rather than talking about my book, on Twitter and Facebook, what I do is talk about things that relate to my book. So if you're writing, so something that I would do online to generate interest would be to talk about baking and talk about people who like food and who might like a little bit of romance and that kind of thing, and try to, you know, post things that are tangent to just my book,
right.
So that I'm building followers who have a genuine interest in the content. So then when I do say I have a book coming out and it has a baker in it, the people who are seeing that are already used to me posting about that kind of thing.
Oh, right.
And they're genuinely interested in it. And they'll say, oh, you know, she has a really good sense of baker humor. I'm gonna try picking up her book.
Well, thank you, Hugh, that's what we're looking for.
And it's kind of about, you know, building that emotional connection and that personal connection with people is really, really useful. I mean, it's useful to have all of your online properties so it's easy for people to see you, but to engage with them directly, I think, is really where you can get results.
Wow, those were great, KJ. Once again, just listen to them again. I'm like, oh my gosh, these people were so informative and so inspiring.
Yes. And you know, it's funny because I've, like you said, we listened to all these podcasts again. I'm like, okay, I'm taking notes again. Like, these are the things I didn't actually do and I need to go back and take care of.
Wonderful. What great clips.
Yes. Now, the next ones that we have, most creative book promotion. I mean, who doesn't love a cheeky marketing story? That's Dave Perlmutter.
I try to keep it really sort of not just about the books, you know, just especially on Twitter, just alternative as well. God, but very quickly, well, I went into the local, you know, Tesco's.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So the local one where I live a few weeks back, I went there with a paperback of Wrong Place, Wrong Time. So it's not sold on the high street. I wish it was. I put the book on bookshelves. And I did it between like Sir Alex Ferguson and Gone Girl, which were really prominent at that time. Took a picture of it and I tweeted it. I actually left the book there.
Oh, that is hysterical. I love that idea.
Later that day, my sister had to get a present and she was looking for a book and she phoned me up and said, Dave, I can't believe it. Your book's on the shelf. So what I do, I tweeted it and I added Tesco's Addy in there and they retweeted it and they replied. As well, and they replied 2 days ago. They replied and used the hashtag
Football Manager. Too funny.
Yesterday, when I put it on Facebook yesterday or the day before, he goes, "Oh, can I nick this?" And he did the same thing. This is what I put. This is in this other book too. It's sort of out of the box thinking. Yeah. You know, people laugh at it, and so I do frequently go to pubs, and you know, I try if I have a paperback. And I've tweeted it as well. But I've got like these two couples to hold my book up or look at it like they're reading it. And, you know, I tweet that and say, I've got my weekend reading and there's a person holding your book. So
I think that's fabulous.
Very creative.
Yeah. It's all to do with marketing. You know, cheeky marketing. That is one chapter.
That's what you should call book three, cheeky marketing.
You know, maybe tweeted it to the 2 million...
I love it. I think that's the smartest thing I've heard all week.
It really is.
Oh, it's only Monday. It's not, is it? It's Friday.
Yeah, you got to miss. I mean, we just had to put that in because he is just hysterical. Dave Perlmutter is like a marketing machine, all of his own. And he just doesn't care. He's out there doing it, and he eventually got himself a book deal.
Yeah.
You have to admire the guy's goal, and we loved his cheeky marketing tip. It was great.
Dave. And then we have Munir. I mean,
oh, yeah,
also...
another one who's really bold.
And then before reaching out to sort of a bigger audience, went on the streets with flyers. I was distributing the book. And
wow.
Buy it, which again sort of helped sales and reviews.
People bought it from that. That's amazing. I've never heard of anyone doing that. What a great idea.
Yeah.
It was the most practical thing I could do, you know, as a cost effective way at the time of getting it out there. So I printed out 10,000 flyers.
Wow. I want to talk a little bit about the picture of your book on a tablet.
Sure. So the picture the ladies are referring to is one of me naked and then there is an iPad covering it, and embossed on that is the book cover. And the reason why that happened was because I couldn't afford to have models that could pose for the flyer. And so I got people around, and again, I knew a camera crew who were willing to do the picture. So that helped. And the reason for going naked was to have a talking point, because it was easy to introduce that while I was trying to get interviews or handing out flyers to people, because it was intriguing.
Yeah, exactly.
And the image sort of, I guess, softened the conversation, because the first thing people would say is that you? I would say yes, and then get into the conversation about the book.
Who doesn't want to look at least the naked guy on the cover and find out what the heck is this book about? I think that was brilliant.
If you listen to his podcast, what KJ's talking about there is, don't worry, it's not a scary, like, book at all. He tells us the whole story. The bits that need to be covered are covered. The
funniest part to me was when he described how the photographers were right there and all these ladies came to watch too. I was like, oh my God, who comes up with that? And is brave enough to just like, let's strip down and let you take my picture for my promotion of my book. Oh my God, that would never happen.
Cool.
And we have Seamus. Oh, another
God bless him.
Really bold move is just to go onto LinkedIn and ask people.
Yeah, and just to demystify LinkedIn a little bit, because that feels a little bit like Google Plus to me. I don't really know how to market over there.
Yeah.
And he talks about what he did, and I think it was very successful.
Yeah, it was very successful. And Seamus is another one that just is such a great supporter of indie authors. He's got a huge heart. He's Scottish. He's got that, I don't know, there's something about Scottish people. It is really super special, where they, you know, they're very self-effacive, and he just goes so far out of his way to help people.
Put him on, and then on LinkedIn, some guy came on and said his boss thinks LinkedIn's a heap of rubbish, and he was going to get $1 from his boss for everybody who said they liked his post. And he said, I've got about 100 people, I should make about $100 from my boss. This was a day and a half later, and already he was at 1,800.
Yeah.
Bingo. So I went on to LinkedIn and said, this is my punch at the moon. And I told people where to find the book on Amazon and asked them if they'd be kind enough. If they downloaded the book, that was wonderful. What I wanted them to do was to put it through to all their address book and ask them all to do the same. So within 1 month, I had 80 sales out of Caramba. Within 3 months, there were 1,000 sales.
My God.
That's how you do it.
Yeah. I love supporting him in this small, tiny way that we are, because he's worthy, definitely. And then the tip that I'm using right now from Mark Sadler is about the Pinterest, adding the secret pins.
Oh, yeah, that's so good.
One of the things that I've done over the last couple of years is build up a file with Pinterest. You can also have secret files on Pinterest that nobody else can see. So what I've done there is, since it's 3 books, I have a secret file for each book. And I'm going to, as the books release, I'm going to release the Pinterest page.
Oh, that's so smart.
So what I've done is, there's a young lady in the novel that's a streetwalker prostitute. So I've described her with, you know, red hair and tattoos and all this kind of stuff. Well, I found a picture of someone on Pinterest that looks like her. So I've got these pictures of his half-sister, the prostitute. I've got pictures of the 1957 Porsche Cabriolet that he drives. I've got pictures of what I think his house looked like, and the furniture, and the clothes that he wears, and the food that his mother fed him in El Salvador when he was a kid.
These
pictures here, in my imagination, is what I'm writing about looks like. And so when you take a picture in Pinterest, if you lose track of where you are in the writing process, and you can take that picture, and then that brings that whole postcard thing back.
That's true.
Particularly if we're visual. I'm very visual, and so is KJ. That would really work well for us.
Yeah.
Are you doing that right now?
I've been doing it ever since he told us that tip. I have my special file for my Shattering Time, which is coming out next year. Every time I research something, I save the picture and the article in that little secret file, and it's going to be so much easier when I go to market that book. I'll have all this stuff, you know? And then we have Nicole Wagoner.
Well, and Nicole, we loved interviewing Nicole. She was such another really motivated person. She'd done so much even with her launch. And she really shares a great tip to get readers into that second book. And you need to hear this clever way that she came up with this.
Who has a book club? So I got on meetup.com and I found some book club. And I pitched them the work. And I said, you know, it's a work in progress. But if I'm going to pursue publication, I want to know if I have something. And so book clubs, I didn't know what beta readers were. Like, I didn't know. And one interesting thing that this book has a cliffhanger, it ends on a cliffhanger, a pretty significant one, and we included a link at the back of the ebook and then just a website address in the back of the paperback version that takes you to the website, and you can read the first 5 chapters of book 2, which is called The Act, immediately. And I solved the clinger on page 1. And so far, I've had 900 people go to the website and read the sample pages.
Wow.
So, yes.
I'd say that's
They must be very well-mannered folks, because no one has posted any spoilers that have made it my way that I've seen. So.
That's good. I like that concept, though, that you're bringing them directly from your book into your social media stuff, you know, your website and everything else. And then they look around and they see what else you've got. I mean, I think that's genius.
It's something I'm definitely going to use in my books.
Oh, yeah. I've already decided. I mean, I took that idea and now I'm going to have a newsletter. And I didn't exactly have a cliffhanger, but my book kind of ended suddenly. And so now I'm going to give people that little bit that kind of brings them into the second book and finalizes the last book. So I thought that was brilliant what she came up with for that.
So here for you to listen is the second category in our competition, which is called, KJ?
The Most Creative Book Promotion.
Most Creative Book Promotion. Don't forget to vote.
kjwatersauthor.blogspot.com. Something like that. And then, now, this was a fun one to put together.
I love this one. Because each story had me riveted.
Me too.
This is really about podcast content, more than it is about the author's, you know, tips and things. This is about content that I felt was really great listening.
Me too. Best fangirl or a boy story. And some of these are really crucial. Like the first one, Camille DeMaio, the Paul McCartney who read her book on stage. This whole book is based on Eleanor Rigby. So yeah, this is like probably one of the best moments of her life she shares.
My novel was inspired by the song Eleanor Rigby. I couldn't use the names and everything, but at the time I did. I had the character names were a little bit different, and I always had this dream of just getting it to Paul McCartney. I tried reaching his publicist. I tried mailing it to people that I knew him, because I thought, how on earth do you get things to Paul McCartney? And then I found out that he was coming to San Antonio for an unscheduled benefit concert. It was not part of his regular tour. It was at a relatively small venue. Somebody in my family knew it was important to me and got me a ticket. So I went to the concert and I came armed with a manuscript thinking, gosh, I've got to be able to give this to somebody. My mom had the great idea to bring a sign, and my sign said, I wrote a book about Eleanor Rigby, may I give you a copy? So if all else failed, I was just going to try to go straight to the man himself. And he ended up playing the song Eleanor Rigby, which I found out later, this was the first tour that he's ever included that song in a set. So that was really a pretty big deal. Wow. And it was kind of a now or never moment. So he finished the song, I unfolded my sign, I held it up just for a few seconds, just long enough for me to say, I see that he saw this, and I folded it right back up. And he went on just about to start the next song, and he took this breath, and he said, put his hand out over his eyes and looked into the crowd. He said, did somebody say they wrote a book about Eleanor Rigby? And I raised my hand, and he said, and you want to give me a copy? And I said, yes. He said, well, you sure can, baby. I'd love to read it. And he called me up to the stage, and I got to hand it to Paul McCartney and myself. And that was after all these years of thinking, I just want to mail it somehow to the guy. But here I was handing it to him in front of all these people.
That is incredible.
It was amazing. And I thought he would just hand it off to a roadie or something, but he actually took it up to the mic and started reading it.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Did he actually read it out or just read it to himself?
No, he read it out loud. And I'm sitting here going, oh, my gosh, Paul McCartney is reading my book to all these people. That was pretty surreal.
Another, once again, she stepped out. As you hear the clip, you'll hear what she did. But she stepped out. She just did, you know, she was bold. And every one of these authors, you know, were bold in some way, which is what makes them stand out, you know.
Yeah. Not being afraid to get out of your comfort zone, you know. And then, of course, near and dear to my heart is the story by Kim Hunt about Diana Gabaldon. And
because KJ, if you don't know, KJ's a big Diana Gabaldon fan.
I am. And she was
pretty excited about this.
Yeah, she inspired my book. And I was just like, oh, my God, you're my soul sister. I didn't even know.
That conference that I went to in Phoenix that I talked about, where I pitched the book to the editor from Harlequin. We went to Phoenix because Diana Gabaldon was going to be there. And then having the editor appointment was just kind of it was kind of my excuse for flying to Phoenix.
She gave you good juju then.
She was there and she was speaking, and my husband went with me, and Okay, so when it came time to meet her, when she was signing her books and I could go up and get a book signed, I was terrified and I couldn't do it. It was like looking at the sun. I couldn't look directly at her. It was in this hotel where they had big potted plants, you know, and I just hid behind the plant and stared at her.
Oh my gosh, that is hilarious.
You should write to a ton of that now. You should put that.
And then I ended up, you know, a few years after that, I had attended another conference with her, and I was actually in the elevator with her. So, I made eye contact, and I spoke to her, and I've never forgotten that.
What'd you say to her?
I had gone all the way to Phoenix, and then my husband's like, you've got to go meet her. I'm like, oh, I can't. So he went and got a book signed for me and gave it to me. But she's, you know, she just, to me, is just such a fantastic, amazing, amazing writer.
She is. She definitely is. I agree 100%.
And it's just a funny story.
It is.
It's so fangirly, what we would do. You know, I love that story. So real.
Yes, real humans in real situations. And then, of course, Tom Nichols, who's the police chief, and his big event pitching to Tarantino to have the movie picked up by them.
The screenplay has been written, but the movie has never been made. It had a price tag of $35 million on it, so it hasn't been picked up yet. But well, the movie rights were picked up by Tarantino Productions.
Yeah.
Now, that is Tony Tarantino, who is the father of Quentin Tarantino.
Yes, pretty exciting there. And what is the process? What stage are you in right now?
Well, screenplay is written. I had editorial rights on the screenplays. Screenplay is finished, and now it's just a matter of finding somebody to fund a $35 million project. And that's not easy. That's a lot of work, and hope it happens. It would certainly augment a little retirement check.
This is true.
The saying goes, enjoy the journey. We've traveled with that book to New York City, Las Vegas, Hollywood, several trips to Hollywood, attended a lot of meetings, parties in Hollywood. So it has certainly been a fun experience, and the book has sold well, and hopefully someday the movie will make, and that would just be the cherry on top of the cake.
Absolutely. Well, Suzanne is a producer and a screenwriter. Why don't you guys, Suzanne?
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you, how did they hear about your book? How did it come to the Tarantinos?
Well, it's so strange is that I made contact with a policeman I had never heard of in my life in San Jose, California, who had bought the book and read it and liked it, and who had his own private little company doing aerial photography for movie companies. One thing led to another, and next thing I know, my wife and I were at a Sunday afternoon party in the Hollywood Hills. I was the only person there with the book for sale. Everybody else was a director, producer, finance manager. So it was a fun day.
That's a pretty interesting story. And you could just picture him, you know, here's this guy from Texas. He's out there in Hollywood at this big party.
He's retired, too. He's like in his late 60s.
Yeah.
You know, he probably stuck out like a sore thumb in Hollywood.
Probably did. I didn't even think about that.
From Texas, you know, police chief.
Yeah, police chief. So, so that's interesting. And then, of course, one of our favorite guests, Charlie Love, also known as Edward Stanton.
Charlie Love. Oh, what are you going to do with the Charlie Love guy? He is just a riot.
I knew an actress, and her name is Pamela Bowen, and she's a very good actress. She actually won for the New York for the best independent film, the best actress. But when I got a hold of her, you know, she had a movie that had just come out, and we were talking about that. She said, look, because I don't mind talking about my ex-husband, because everybody knows who he is, and, you know, he's very famous and famous all around the world. So she goes, but I just don't want you to dwell on that, right? And then I go, well, okay, well, who are you married to? She goes, I was married to Paul Stanley, and he's the lead singer and guitarist from Kiss. And I go, oh, okay. She told some funny stories about him, too. I mean, she came from somewhere deep in the heart of Texas, you know, on some prairie, and, you know, he was a famous rock star. She goes, somebody set them up on a date, and she opened up the door, she was in LA, and then, you know, yeah, she wasn't wearing his makeup, and he was like, hey, you know, I'll play some flowers, you know, you want to go out to eat? And she says, for the first 2 or 3 months they dated, he would not tell her what she did. No, it was so funny when she was telling Pamela, she's going, you know, we're having dinner, and she goes, I never hear your band play, but your friends say that, you know, you guys are pretty good, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, well, whatever. She goes, well, what are you playing? She goes, I'm coming down to see you guys play. Are you playing, like, you know, like the Joe's Bowling Alley or whatever?
Joe's Bowling
Alley.
Not
like, he goes, no, I'm going to play bars. I'm going to play pubs, you know, clubs. And she goes, well, where do people hear you? And he goes, stadiums. And she goes, no, get out of town. She goes, name me a song that you did. So he named up a couple of songs, and they were like, number one. And she's just like, no. Yes. You're a kid? And he goes, I am.
Oh my goodness, that's
a... Oh my gosh, that's so funny. I wonder how long that was into their relationship.
You know, what she told me, if I remember correctly, it was like 4 or 5 months when they were dating.
Yeah. Are you serious? She didn't know what he did for 4 or 5 months. He's very entertaining. Yes. You know, we had so much... When we actually came to cut his podcast down, we could have gone on for days.
We could have.
And I remember, KJ, that when we were recording his, we were recording him the day that the podcast launched. We already recorded people that were going to... Do you remember?
I forgot.
And we were exhausted, the pair of us. And he is just chatting away. And we just totally let our barriers down and just enjoyed it.
Yes.
We did. Fortunately, he was a guest we didn't have to encourage to talk. We had plenty to talk about. But he went on forever. Do you remember? It was like an hour and a half.
It was an hour and a half. And meanwhile, I think our Podbean had crashed. There was like all this disaster happening. We put up our first three podcasts, and it's like a Podbean unplugged for the day or something. Yeah. I was just like, what?
We were on the holiday.
So we're trying to like...
Having a cigarette, you know?
We're negotiating this giant nightmare of our first lunch. Not that anyone else noticed, because no one knew who
it was. It was giant to us, though.
Yeah. But it was a nice relief from the stress of all the build-up. We had 3 months of build-up to create the podcast, and there we have Charlie Love, who was fun.
Don't forget to go and vote for the one that you think you enjoy the most, which will be at
www.kjwatersauthor.blogspot.com.
Yay! So the next category that we actually put together, why don't you introduce that, KJ?
All right, and this one is up right now. This is our latest one. The first category that we just wanted to have a little bit of fun. Our podcast is kind of melds into Suzanne's motto, but if it isn't fun, I'm not doing it. So, and so we had to put in some of our funniest moments, and we've had a lot of them. We try to make sure every podcast we're enjoying it. The author hopefully will be enjoying it. So we try to make it fun. It was hard to pick the funniest, but the ones that stuck out in our minds the most are from Carrie Schaefer.
She was a riot.
Oh my gosh.
Carrie was a riot. When I was actually picking clips, there was like 4 clips we could have picked. Yeah. We could have just played you the whole podcast, because she was just so much fun.
She was.
Yeah, there was a couple of really good ones, and we managed to narrow it down.
Yeah,
she had us laughing a couple of times.
We want to dig into your brilliant brain there and find out what kind of social media sites you use and what is working well for you and what is kind of a mystery to you.
Okay.
Dish, girl.
You hear the panic edge to the laughter there.
Yes, the cackle. The maniacal laugh.
So, you really want me to answer that question now?
Yes, tell us.
We just moving on. Okay, well, once upon a time when I first started in this journey, Twitter was my favorite. I loved it a lot. When I started Twitter, I was on Twitter as Uppington Smythe.
Oh, what?
Which was a wonderful thing, because it was very freeing and nobody really knew who I was.
Oh, that's cool. Uppington Smythe.
Where did you get that name from?
That's hilarious.
Well, see, now that's a long story. I have to think about whether I can tell you that or not.
She's so much fun.
It's a code name that I borrowed from somebody, and I probably actually can't tell you that.
That's okay. So, we can leave it as borrowed code name. That's original enough.
It was wonderful, and I loved it. And I was working crisis at the time, which was even better, because then I would just say things like, well, I'm off to jail. I'll catch you later.
Oh, my gosh. That's hilarious.
So it was fun. But then around the time when I was looking at, I'm really close to maybe being published, I had a nibble from, my first agent that asked for an exclusive and all that sort of thing. I was like, okay, now I have to be legit. So I have to be an adult now.
Oh, dang it. Reality.
So that when I meet agents at conferences and stuff, I say my name is Carrie Schaefer. They know who that is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I'm expecting me to be Uppington, Which I still want to publish a book under that name someday. We're waiting.
You should.
So,
it should be called The Graveyard.
Maybe The Graveyard Files.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It should be called The Graveyard Files.
Ooh, well, that would be fun. You guys are giving me ideas. So I became
newspaper, and that was really awesome for a few years. Really, still with Twitter, I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, she was a hoot. Just such a fun, playful person and a great writer. And the next one was JD Lex, who has the Super Dude Lightning Round. We had just switched to a different Lightning Round. We had like, you know, 4 or 5 months of one, and then we switched. And he was so much fun, I think we gave him both. So do we want to do the Lightning Round?
Yeah, you know what? We have a brand new Lightning Round, JD, so we don't know what we're doing here.
Turned out like it's a good thing. Now I'm terrified. Let's do it.
Okay. What is your favorite writing spot?
Out back in the gazebo.
Oh, you have a gazebo?
A gazebo and a hammock, which is probably the least productive writing spot, but I do.
How do you juggle a computer on a hammock?
You don't know half of what I can do. It's amazing.
Oh, do tell.
We did it all wrong, Katie. I sit at a desk. What was I thinking?
Oh, a desk? That's so impossible.
I may start up a podcast from the gazebo. Who knows?
Hey, now that you could probably do. If you could be transported back in time, where would you go?
When did this podcast start?
Oh, about 46 minutes ago?
17th century New Orleans. I want to see all the cultures converging. I want to see how this all really went down.
Oh, that is a great
answer.
That
would be so cool.
That is a great answer.
You could actually write from being there. You know, wouldn't that be?
Oh, that's what I'm thinking. Just sit in Jackson Square, which hasn't changed since then, and just let everything work around you. Just write it as it goes.
Wow, that would be so cool. Oh, man. You got my mind cracking with that one.
Chills, right?
Yes. Okay, here's a good one. If you had a superpower, what would you want it to be?
You mean another one?
First tell us your superpower, and then, wait, he's an erotic writer. Maybe we don't want to know.
Yeah, we'll keep that. We'll keep that off the record. I always want to go with invisibility, but that always sounds so perverse. But I'm going to stick with it anyway. What the hell?
Hey, yeah, go with your heart,
and
man.
What would you want to do it when you're invisible? What sort of thing?
Well, wouldn't that just open the door to everything? Because why would I tell you now if I'm invisible? That kind of ruins the whole thing.
Yeah. Oh, Suzanne, you better watch out.
Eventually, right?
We could be sat right here. I don't know.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. Too much fun. He was hilarious.
Yeah, his Lightning Round was definitely fun.
Yeah, it was a hoot. So, and then we have Sharon Anderson.
Her stories about her. We have to listen to her interview, but her process and what she writes about, we actually really got into some fun with her.
With Fire Run, that sounds dangerous.
It is. Lie down on the floor. Simple questions, they're not hard questions.
Uh-oh.
Are you ready?
I guess.
Okay, fasten your seatbelt. Here we go.
Oh, no.
Tea or coffee? I told you it was easy.
Oh, well, no, it's not easy.
She's so dumb on the first question.
Pass.
You can phone a friend, but you can't pass.
Coffee.
Good. Whew, that was
too hard.
Okay, is there a book you could read every year?
Yes.
What is it?
Wes and Future King.
Oh, I've never even heard of that. Who's that by?
T.S. Eliot.
Oh, I love T.S. Eliot. Cool.
Look, you never heard of it.
I've heard of T.S. Eliot. I just haven't heard of that particular book.
Okay.
But I'm going to look it up now because that sounds so cool.
Okay.
Dog or cat?
Dog or cat? How can you make me choose?
I'll just, you know, look at them both, decide which one you could get rid of.
Not get rid of my dog. My dog. Oh. It's got to be a dog.
Favorite comfort food?
Comfort food. I've been guilted out of all of my comfort food.
Oh,
I have to say, scones. Love scones.
And then I'm bringing scones when I come for lunch.
Oh, yeah.
I want some, too. I love scones.
Yeah.
Well, you need to come, KJ. Hop a plane.
KJ lives in Dirtville.
I live in Dirtville. And it's as good as it
is. Scones in Dirtville. Okay. You have a nickname.
I'm not going to share that. Why should I share? Oh, okay, it's a wart.
She was so easy to talk into that.
Wow.
Okay.
Twisted her arm.
You know what? You don't have to go into why you're called
for. Yeah, you can leave that private.
But thank you for sharing.
She totally went with it and had some fun on the podcast with us about her storylines, which was great, you know?
Yeah, it was really fun. And then Luke Romaine, how do you know?
Oh, we not long interviewed him, and he was another great big character, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of fun stories.
Yeah.
What was the one that we picked for him, KJ?
The bicycle underpants story.
Oh, that's right, the bicycle underpants
story. Yeah,
of course. And then this story is just absolutely bizarre. It's 100% true, but it's something that happened to him when he got recognized in New York. So just hilarious.
I got recognized on the street in New York.
Get out. Wow, that's amazing.
I seriously did on the street corner.
That's amazing.
Was that a good moment?
Oh, my God.
Oh, that was the best day of my life. Yeah.
Oh, that's so cute.
It really was. And it's an interesting story. And a strange individual from New York, an older man, a white guy, was riding past in his underpants on a bike, you know, with his genitals hanging out the sides of his underpants.
What?
And my wife turned to me and she said, "Did you see that?" And I said, rather jokingly, I said, "I was doing everything in my power not to see that." I turned around, I'm laughing, and I looked at this guy, and this guy was just staring at me, and not the guy with the underpants.
Thank goodness.
And I thought, oh my God, I've upset someone, I've offended someone. I'm Australian, we offend everyone. And so I'm looking at her, so I said, "Oh, hi, how are you?" And he said, "Are you Luke?" I went, "Yes." And he goes, "Luke Romaine." "Yeah, yeah." And I shook his hand and he went, "Oh my God, I can't believe it's you." And I'm thinking, "Oh my God, I can't believe it's you."
I love this story. This is such a fun story.
Yeah, yeah. It's something you couldn't make up. It was true. And all I could think was, "Be professional, be professional."
Don't gush all over the place.
Yeah, don't gush on this guy. "Oh my God, I love you."
I love that. So he just came up and said, "You look," and then talked about your books. I mean, because you didn't know who he was, right?
We were standing side by side waiting to cross the road.
How could you not choose that story? I mean, just the name of it makes me laugh hysterically. And he's, like Suzanne said, his personality, he's just so, like, he's so modest and so, like, down to earth. He's Australian, so he's got that really cool accent. Plus, he's got, like, that little sense of humor. And last but not least, we have Lynn Lamb, who writes, like, apocalyptic stories, and she tried out all these things that she writes in the book with her mom. So you can just imagine, like,
Look at itself, what she does.
I actually did an amusing video. I did it with my mother. She was such a sport to do it with me, and it's on my website. Of we spent the day in the dark without power, trying some of the techniques used in my book.
Oh, that's so cool!
Okay. It was a lot of fun. We broke into hysterics several times. I probably almost lit her house on fire. Because really, I'd never tried any of these things. And I did a beer can where you cut up the can and you light it on fire so you can make hot water if you're a coffee drinker, and all sorts of fun things. So you should check
it out. I'm so behind the times. If there's some sort of a clue, I'm the first to go. I haven't got a clue what I'm doing. I laugh because
People come to me now as if I have an expertise, and I'm not a survivalist. I'm not a prepper, really. I have my emergency kit. I always have had that because I live in California with our earthquakes. But I think I'd be with you. I think I'd be
hopeless. I got like one tin of beans in the cupboard and $10 in my wallet. How long would that last me?
Even the money after a while, and in my stories, money has no meaning.
Yeah.
Wow.
Cut the power off and they're trying to like cook beans, you know, with a little so hilarious. Yeah, super good fun.
Okay, wow, those were great, KJ. Gosh, yeah, wow. And so the last category that we wanted to introduce to you, and don't forget, you can go and vote for any of these awards, and we also will be having a Facebook party on the 14th of October, which we'll talk about at the end of the podcast. But this next category we want to talk about is Best New Author Story. And you know, that's the thing that often people want to know is, how did you break in? How did you get people to look at your book? How did you whatever? And some of these stories are amazing. Some just heart-wrenching, the years of people putting their work out there, and some just amazing luck, you know? And so we wanted to really honor these people's journey.
Yes, exactly. So for this, we have Dorinda Jones. She is a really big author now, and each year grows and grows with her following. And she tells us how, like, her very humble beginnings.
You know, growing up, I had hundreds of stories and all this stuff. And it wasn't until high school that I actually figured out that I really wanted to be a writer. And that was thanks to my best friend. And, you know, she told me, she said, "You just keep coming back to writing. Why don't you just try to be a writer?" And I thought, well, writers are, you know, they're all either geniuses or alcoholics, and I'm neither, so I didn't think I could be. I ended up, you know, I got married and had kids, and after I graduated college, I decided that I was at least going to finish manuscript. And because I had started literally hundreds, like it's not even funny. Then I started seriously looking into getting published. I wrote every agent under the sun. I submitted everywhere, not to houses. I knew better than to submit to houses, but I submitted to every agent that I could find, and got lots of rejections. And I decided to enter the RWA, Romance Writers of America, Golden Heart. Because to enter that, your manuscript has to be finished. Mm-hmm. So I thought, if nothing else, it'll force me to finish this manuscript. I was at work, and my husband texted me and said that you have a message. You finaled in some contest. And I said, I haven't entered any contest. I don't know what you're talking about.
He'd forgotten.
It's the golden something or other. And I almost fell out of my chair because it's to final in this contest is very prestigious. I knew I had to take advantage of this because suddenly agents are coming to me wanting to read my manuscript instead of the other way around, you know. I polished it, sent it out to agents, and within 1 week I had 8 offers of representation. So that was very overwhelming. It was a very stressful week, believe it or not.
Wow, I bet.
They're calling day and night, and you know, they call it a beauty contest, by the way. And this one agent said, well, I've never lost a beauty contest. I said, well, you're about to lose this one.
Oh my gosh.
I'm very honored. Don't get me wrong. I'm so grateful to all of these, but there were a couple of crazy ones. I chose my amazing agent, Alexander Machinas. And so we actually met at the RWA National Conference, and that is where the awards are given out. And I ended up winning the Golden Heart, so mm-hmm. that's even more prestigious. And about a week later, we had our first offer. So, and it was a really good offer. And we had 3 houses who were bidding on it, who wanted it. And so it was very cool. We finally accepted a preempt from Jennifer Enderlin at St. Martin's Press. And I have just been thrilled with all of my decisions so far. Mm-hmm. They're just the best decisions. Alexander's amazing. Jennifer's amazing. And I'm so fortunate. It's insane. I don't know why this happened to me, but it's,
wow.
It's very much a dream come true.
Nice.
Really exciting. And then Susan Spann.
Oh yeah. Seriously. She was, wow. Her whole interview is very inspiring. I was very inspired after her interview. She just was so encouraging to authors, you know, the whole time. And that was amazing.
Yes.
So yeah.
And she went through years. So just hear hers. If you are struggling with, you know, how do I keep going? Listen to her interview, because this woman has tenacity. She seriously stuck with it. And now she's very successful. So
the title of my publishing journey is How I Got Kicked Down Every Flight of Stairs in Publishing. I knew I wanted to be a writer from the time I was very young. You know, life and marriage and children and things get in the way. I looked at myself in the mirror and said, you know, you're 30. You've wanted this since you were 4. Are you going to turn 40 and still be asking yourself? And so I went to the Maui Writers Conference. The novel that I had written actually placed in the finals of their contest. One of the agents that asked for the novel called me on the phone, and I was so excited, and I thought, this is it. She started the conversation, major agent, by saying, I'm not calling to offer you representation, but if you're willing to listen, I would like to tell you why. And it was one of the most valuable experiences of my life. When I got off the phone, you know, I felt as if I'd been punched in the gut repeatedly.
Well,
and it was very important that she said to me, she said, you can get there, but not with this book. You have to write another one. And so I sat down, I wrote another book, and it took me 18 months, and I got another sheaf of rejections. And I wrote another book, and that was, you know, book 3, book 4, if you count the disaster in high school. That one was getting rejected. And then I looked at myself in the mirror and said, okay, so from now on, you're writing a book a year, and then you have to put this one down and query the next one. And so I did 2 more books like that. And, you know, slight flash forward to 2012, I met with a wonderful agent and editor, Denny Dietz of 5-Star Books, and I pitched her Joan of Arc, and I pitched her a historical Mulan that I had written, thereby violating my rule that you can only pitch the book you just finished. Okay. And she looked at me across the table and she said, but do you write mystery? You know, I had just had this idea for a mystery novel involving a ninja who solves murders instead of committing them. And she looked at me and she said, write that book. That was in June of 2012. And that book wrote itself so fast that by the time Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers Conference came around at the end of September in 2012, that book was finished. Wow. Never written a book that fast in my life. Deborah,
you're giving me chills just telling me this story.
Went to the conference, could not get a pitch appointment with the number one agent on my list at that point, who was Sandra Bond. Ran into her after the banquet and pitched the novel to her. 2 weeks later, she signed me.
Oh my goodness. Three months
later, we had a 3-book deal with Minotaur.
Amazing. Wow. Look how fast to the end, after year of rejection.
And that's the lesson I tell everybody. You know, you look at people and you think, oh my gosh, somebody just succeeded so quickly. I like to tell people it's like a military sniper. They have to shoot a million rounds to learn to make a one-shot kill. And I had to write a million words to get to where I am. And so it's easy to get discouraged when you're looking at the journey and going, wow, you know, it's taken me 8, 9 years. If you count them, 10 years and 5 manuscripts to get that first book in print. But since that book came out, I've had a book a year.
You know, there's a lot of things you don't see from people from behind the scenes that got them to where they are. You always think, yeah, they just showed up and they're great. But no, Susan Spann will debunk that myth.
Exactly.
Patricia Sands, she has
Oh, we love Patricia Sands. What a woman who really honored the craft. I mean, she just so loves the craft of writing.
Well, as I say, it really happened by accident 10 years ago when I, you know, started on this first book. And up until that time in my life, I hadn't given any thought to writing whatsoever. I've been a lot of things in my life, and my primary focus has always been my family. I was widowed when I was 43. My husband was 49, and he died suddenly of pancreatic cancer. Our sons were 11 and 12 at the time. And as you can imagine, it was a really devastating time in our lives. The one thing that my husband said to me before he died was, remember that we never know what tomorrow is going to bring. And he said, I want you to promise me that you'll live a life without regret. And I've tried to do that. And I tried to wake up every morning knowing that this is a gift. Every day is a gift. You know, really, I didn't realize it at the time, but kind of all my life, I've told stories through photography. Yeah, I think, you know, photography was something that led me into writing. And I often use my photographs as I'm writing to be a really good source of inspiration and to get something kick-started if I'm a little stuck somewhere.
And she was just because of everything that she got was such a gift to her. You just can't help but be drawn into her story.
Yeah, yeah. And she writes about provincial France and goes on these amazing trips. So if you follow her on Facebook, you'll see all these very beautiful pictures of France. And that's what inspires a lot of her writing. So it's just really cool to see someone be able to succeed and use, you know, one of their passions to go enjoy that. And that brings me to David Estes, who has...
who is your, like, poster boy for what the lifestyle you want, right?
Katie? Exactly. This guy was an accountant. Like, how boring of a job could you possibly imagine? Sorry, accountants, I know, but it's true. And he turned a book idea that he had into, now he lives in Hawaii and he writes on the friggin' beach. Oh my God. I want that life.
So I moved to Sydney from Pittsburgh and met my wife, who was also an accountant at PricewaterhouseCoopers. And you know, she was just such a great motivation and influence on me because I was that guy who was always saying, I could be a writer. I could do that. And so my wife said, well, then quit talking about it and just do it. And I started writing when I was about 29 years old while keeping a full-time job, as most people do. And I don't know if you've been to Sydney before, but we lived at Manly Beach and we had this beautiful commute every day, which was riding the Manly Ferry. And we had, you know, dolphins on the side of us and just everything you could ask for in a commute. But I wasn't enjoying my job, so I started writing while I was on the ferry. So that was where writing a half an hour to work and a half an hour back. And, you know, my novels just started to take shape. And my boss kept joking that, you're not going to write a bestseller and then leave us, are you? And I said, oh, no, it's just for fun. It's just a hobby. And, you know, sure enough, about 2 years after I started writing, one of my novels got a bit of a kick in the butt from BuzzFeed. And from there, things just took off and I was able to leave my job as an accountant and do this full time.
Wow. I'm in awe.
I am too. What's BuzzFeed thing? How did that work out?
That was amazing. I actually had just finished about a year earlier my first novel in the Dweller saga, which is called The Moon Dwellers. And I'd been working on the sequels and publishing the sequels. then started one day, I woke up and I had all these emails, all these social media tweets and Facebook messages, and they all said, have you seen the BuzzFeed article? And I said, this is me, the guy who, you know, is very little about technology. What's BuzzFeed? Was my response.
That's awesome.
What? An article had come out that was 15 series to read if you would join the Hunger Games, which, of course, the Hunger Games, with the movies coming out, it had been just going, taking off into the stratosphere. And I opened the article, and I started scrolling through the list, and every series that was on there was, you know, a series I had read, I had loved. Many of them had been optioned for their own movie deals, and I started going through them, and I'm like, what does this have to do with me? And then, lo and behold, I get to the 15th series on there, and it's the Dweller Saga. And apparently, you know, that was enough to get a lot of interest. From there, sales just kind of took off, and I started, instead of selling hundreds a month, I was selling thousands a month. And my wife and I kind of looked at each other and said, this is our opportunity. Are we gonna take it? You know, are we gonna go for it? And so within a few months, we had planned a trip around the world where I would write and she would be my editor. And so we put in our kind of 2 months notice at work and just went for it.
Wow. Somehow you've got my life, David. I don't know how that happened.
I think we need to somehow arrange that, Suzanne. So there's
totally. He's inspiring because I think a lot of authors have this dream. Yeah. The barefoot on the beach dream with a laptop, you know?
Yeah, he's making it work. And he works really hard, too. These aren't people that are just lounging about on the beach. This guy is, like, very prolific, works really hard with street teams and author promotion kind of stuff. So
we hope you really enjoyed it, our award ceremony show. Go and listen to some of these podcasts all in their entirety because some of them are incredible. But please take time to go vote for the ones that you really enjoyed. We're going to be honoring these authors, well, all the authors, but we'll be giving away trophies to the winners at our Facebook party.
That's right.
You want to talk about what that is? Because our audience is very welcome to join us over there.
Yes, we want everyone to come and see who wins. And we're going to have, you know, the authors that are part of the podcast are going to be there too. We also have, before I get onto that, we have the next couple weeks, there's still more voting. So keep checking that blog and we will have another show like this in a few weeks to kind of update you on the last couple categories.
If you want to join the Facebook party, what is the URL?
So if you want to join the Facebook party, go to the blog. And there's a little link that you can click. I can't give them the URL because it's like a whole bunch of numbers. So.
Okay, that's what I meant.
I'm going to torment you all with the stupid numbers.
It's AFGXY /.
Yes, let's all suffer through that. I think.
Are you writing this down?
Yeah, please write this down. No, just go to the easiest way. Is either go to our Facebook page, Blondie and the Brit, Writing, Publishing, and Beyond. We're on Facebook. Or you can go to that blog, www.kjwatersauthor.blogspot.com. And on each of the posts where we have the voting, we will have a little link to the Facebook party. And I hope you come. It's going to be fun. Our Facebook parties are amazing, Suzanne.
We just have a blast. We actually do this, but on Facebook.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
We put up funny pictures. We have people dancing. We put out food.
Yes.
It's all, like, online, but it's fun, you know.
Yes. You guys will enjoy it. So please come join us. Get to know us all a little better and connect with some of these amazing
and
authors.
Do we have a time for the Facebook party yet?
Yes. We have put it up as 5 to 7 p.m. Central Time, 6 to 8 on the East Coast, and 4 to 7 on the West Coast.
That was good, KJ.
I'm hoping that's right. Sounded good.
Sometime in there. Just go check it out. It can be on there.
If you're not sure, which I'm not, go to that blog post and check it out. Yes, we hope to see you there.
And we just wanted to wind this up by thanking our audience. Thank you to you guys, because without you, we wouldn't be worth doing. And so we just thank all of our listeners. We get some great feedback from you over this last year. It's really, every time we get feedback, it really encourages us. And we want to thank you for listening. And once again, if you've got tips, anything you want to listen to or you hope we would cover, then please let us know. We'd love to be able to interview people that you're interested in hearing from.
Yeah, and topics to cover, so... Join us there, and we hope to see you. You can reach out to us anytime on Twitter, Facebook, any of the places that we are. So we'd love to hear from you. Please join us next week where we welcome back David Perlmutter to the program. He's featured on this podcast, but he's also back with us to tell us about his journey of being picked up by a publisher. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEAND. BRIT.com.